This week, as it happens, I conclude the period of saying Kaddish for my father. And so it has been, for me, a time of trying to understand better the way in which memory works for individuals and also for us as a people. And one of the things that I have realized that everyone at some point knows, even if they haven't articulated it for themselves, is that there really are two distinct kinds of memories, especially about those whom we knew best and loved most. There are the memories that we can communicate, that can be shared and understood by anyone else. You tell stories about people who have died. You share artifacts of their life. These days, if you're lucky, you can listen to them on tape or on audio or even see videos. And that recreates what is, in some sense, the public, the speakable, the personal part of human memory. But then there are the silent memories, the memories that you cannot share and that cannot be shared. You remember how someone felt, or how you felt when you were with them. You remember a certain quality of character that's precisely the quality of character that you cannot name. You remember something about the essence of the person, and of course the essence of a human being is exactly what is incommunicable to someone who did not know them. And this reality of the silent memory, of the part of people that we can't share, is not only true of individuals, it is also true of events. Because the other thing that I realized with the passing of my father was that there was no one left in my immediate family and immediate world who remembered the greatest calamities of Jewish history. My mother, who was 7 years younger, didn't remember, not firsthand, the way the Jewish world reacted, the shock, the inexplicable horror of the Shoah. She barely remembered the founding of the state, but she was a small child. There was a passing not only of personal memory, but of historical memory. And there, too, the same reality, which is that there are certain things we can share. We can transmit information. We can tell our children what happened in terms of statistics and numbers and reports and memoirs and stories, but we don't feel it. Not the same way as somebody who knew a world that vanished, or who knew a world where there was not a state. If you didn't know a world, you can't feel the silent memories, the feeling of the way things were when the state of Israel was just a dream, and how different the world was the day it was founded. The way things were when you knew that horrible things had happened in Eastern Europe, and the way things were when the reports came to the rest of the world of the unthinkable destruction. That's why on the Pesach Seder, We recreate the Exodus because Chayav Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatza Me'eretz Mitzrayim. You're supposed to see yourself as if you left Egypt. In other words, to the extent that it's possible, you have to share in the silent memories. Not just the story. If the story was enough, you wouldn't have to see yourself as if you left Egypt. You could just hear the story. But there's a level of memory that goes beneath fact, beneath story, beneath information that has to do with the deepest levels of emotion and thoughts. To paraphrase the poet, that lie too deep for words. And that's what all of Pesach is about. It tries to reach beyond the explicit to the implicit, to the layer where you can't even articulate what it is that you remember. You just know that somewhere encoded in your spiritual DNA is a deep memory. We all know this is true. When someone describes a person whom they loved and they said, you really had to know him, that's what they're saying. The silent memory overrides, is more powerful than, is more permanent than the spoken memory. And that's what we lose when everyone who remembers someone has passed away. You lose that silent memory. You can still tell their story, but no one feels the feeling of what the person was like. No one has that deep, inexplicable, ineradicable sense that this person who was in my life felt like no one else. And that's part of the danger. To move back again from private to public, that's part of the danger that the Jewish people faces. We tell our story, but we can see both inside the Jewish people and certainly in the world as a whole that the silent memory of the horror of that time is being lost. Look at what's happening in Europe, a place where you would think that memory would never fade. Where if any place in the world would carry the silent, certain memory of destruction, it would be in the places where the destruction happened, even there. Day after day, the newspapers bring us the disturbing news that people forget. They may not forget the story. They may not forget the facts, although God knows there's plenty of forgetting of the specifics and the facts and the stories. But they forget the deeper import of what it means when the world decides that the Jews are dispensable. Of what it means when one day we say that for an enemy of the state of Israel to get a weapon of mass destruction is unthinkable, and we will go to war to make sure that such a thing doesn't happen. And then a few scant years later, we're talking about containment, because after all, the prospect of anything else seems too horrific to contemplate. And our deep memories fade as our explicit memories fade. The public workings of memory sometimes are not so different from the private workings of memory. It takes an enormous amount of effort to give some small sense of what a human being was really like, to capture something more than the explicit details of their life, something more than an encyclopedia article, something more than this person was born here, lived here, and died there. That part is easy. What is harder is to give a sense of who an individual was, especially to those who loved her or who loved him. But that gift, the gift of deeper memory, is vital not only for us as individuals, but for us as a people. So many of our holidays are about ritual reenactments. Why do we fast for Ta'anit Esther? Because we want to try to feel what Esther felt before she went in front of the king, because it's not enough just to know the story, we want to feel the feelings. It's why in the Seder we reenact the Exodus, because we want to try to feel what it is, not just tell the story, but feel the story. It's why, as I said, on Shabbat, when we open the door for Elijah, we also say, Shvoch Hamacha, pour out your wrath, because we want to feel anew the terror that our ancestors felt at Passover and Easter time when they knew that rumors of the blood libel were in the streets. It's why we stay up all night on Shavuot and we study, because we want to feel what it was to have a sense of God's word in the world for the first time. As individuals and as a people, we understand the many levels on which memory works. The great historian Yosef Yerushalmi passed away this year. And in perhaps his most enduring work, a little book called Zachor, he talks about the different levels of memory and the different ways that they work. And he speaks about historical memory, which is one kind of memory, and then this deep religious memory, which is different, which goes beyond the facts, which isn't the province of the historian, it's the province of the believer. We remember the events of our history in a way that no one who reads about them can remember. And that's really what all these efforts that we make as a community are about. It's true, when you step into a Holocaust memorial or museum, you're supposed to learn something that you didn't know before you walked in, but that's not really the point. If you walk out of Yad Vashem or the Holocaust Memorial and you say, ah, I learned a new fact, then the experience is a failure. But if you walk out with some sense, something that you cannot express, a silent memory, a deeper memory, Then the memorial has served its purpose. When we say Yizkor, that's the memory we're looking for. We don't say Yizkor so that we can remember the city in which someone was born, or the profession in which they excelled, but rather what they meant to us, what it felt like to be close to them, to be held by them, to hear her sing a lullaby, or hear him tell a story. That's the kind of memory that the Yizkor brings home, the deep memory, the memory that is woven throughout our being, the memory that is not based on fact, but is lodged in the heart. As people and as a people, our continued survival depends not only on knowing our story, but on feeling our story. That's why we have the Yizkor prayer. That's why we have this holiday of Pesach, so that we will know and transmit to our children what it feels like to be a Jew. And if we can remind the world what it feels like, then perhaps we can regain some of that understanding of what the world has meant to us and what we have meant to the world. How deeply, how profoundly we have affected one another, how important it is that the Jewish people and the Jewish state continue to be able to give the world their many blessings. In the end, that's what memory is. It's the blessing that keeps those who are gone alive. God gave us memory, said the poet, so that we might have roses in December. We have memory so that we can still have the people who are gone with us, so that we can mourn them and celebrate them, so that we can remember them and feel their presence, both in their stories and in the silence.